Hey everybody, Drew here, thatanxietyguy.com, back for another episode with, on the other end of the line, on the UK, Billy from Anxiety United. Say hello, Billy.
Hello there. It's good to be here again.
Yes, yes. This is the second in our little series that we're going to be doing based on an article I wrote many moons ago called Dealing with Anxiety, The Only Way Out is Through. We're going to break this down. Billy and I are going to go break this down kind of section by section through the article. And in the video description, whether you're listening on my channel or Billy's channel, will be a link to the article. If you want to follow along, go ahead and do that.
Yep.
And what are we going to talk about today, my friend, mate?
We are going to talk about the concept of not being in any real danger. Because it's an important topic, the fact that we all go through this, but essentially there is no danger.
That is true. So the topic of today is fear, right? There.
Correct.
It's all about fear. And fear is probably fear is the driver behind all of this stuff that we're talking about in the end. So the subheading for me was, well, we don't want to bleed into the next episode, but yes, fear feeds the beast. But let's just talk about being in no real danger. I think that's important. So why don't you get started? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think the thing for me, the no real danger, is it's the fight or flight response. That's the thing that really stands out for me. I think with the fight or flight, we experience the exact same things that we would if there was a tiger in the car park. You know,
that's true.
The problem being that if we experienced the fight or flight and there was a real danger, I don't think that we'd think about how fast our heart was beating or how much air we're taking in, because we'd be so focused on dealing with the situation. But I think because it's out of context, that's where the problem lies. It's the physical sensations, the symptoms, and because there's nothing that we're actually afraid of there, it just blows your mind, I guess.
That's a really good point, because there's nothing to focus externally on. So when we get into a panic situation, a panic attack, or anxiety becomes really elevated, we're dealing with fear. For the most part, fear is driving it. And yes, it's all about the adrenaline dump, right? So once that happens, it happens. And these are normal, predictable, measurable physiological responses to the presence of adrenaline in your bloodstream. And we have to recognize that it doesn't necessarily mean, just because your heart is pumping and you're breathing heavily, and you're sweating and your legs are jelly, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're really in any kind of danger. There is no real danger.
And there's nothing to fight or fly from.
That's exactly right. And you make a really good point. Since there actually is no external danger, nobody has a gun at your head, there's no lion chasing you, all the things that you said, you're not hanging from, you know, a cliff or anything like that. There's nothing to focus that on. So we tend to turn our focus inwards on our thoughts and what we're feeling physiologically. And that's where the fear comes from, yet there's nothing actually there to be afraid of. So how do we recognize that? And then how do we deal with it? Because that's really kind of step one here, is to recognize that you're not in any real danger. Maybe we should go through what people seem to be afraid of.
Okay. So I've made a list of a few of the things that have come to my mind.
Okay.
The fear of going crazy, that's probably a big one.
It's one of the top two.
I don't know if we want to go through these as a list and then go through them.
Sure, let's blow through.
So next I've got the fear of passing out, which is a big one for me. The heart attack, fear of a heart attack.
Yes.
The breathing and suffocation. And then a fear of losing control, just completely gone.
Yes, and I think when you look at study after study, questionnaire after questionnaire over the many years, the top two things that people fear when they get into these situations are the fear of losing control. Losing control and going insane seem to get lumped together, like becoming psychotic. And the other one is dying. So you mentioned like having a heart attack.
I think I read somewhere that for females, it's the going crazy, losing control, and the heart attack is the male thing. Is that?
It seems to be. There's no like hard evidence of that, but you know, Mars and Venus thing. Who the hell knows? I'll never understand those people. So if you have ovaries,
women,
we're never going to we're never going to figure you out. So I probably just had 50% of the population of the planet boycott our podcast. I'm not sure.
I'm going to edit that bit.
Yeah, you might want to edit that out. So no, I mean you're right. So men and women tend to perceive it differently, but the top two concerns that people seem to have, and I think we kind of all relate to them, was dying or going insane or losing control.
Definitely.
And here's the good news. We pretty much know that no one has ever gone insane during a panic attack or lost control or died. So,
well, I think one of the points that I made on that, on the going crazy, was that the fact that you know that you're experiencing all this stuff essentially says that you're of sane enough mind to know that this is happening. So if you were going crazy, you'd probably just be sitting there and stuff would be going on and you wouldn't even really recognize.
You wouldn't
know. Well, anything. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, from a, I mean, it's old school, but the difference between a neurosis and a psychosis and, you know, a anxiety disorder, including agoraphobia and GAD and all that stuff, those are neuroses and it doesn't make you crazy. So crazy people don't know they're crazy.
That's the point I was trying to make, but right. I was going all the way around the houses.
No. But that's okay. That's okay. Yeah, crazy people don't know they're crazy. They don't know they're going crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy
is a derogatory term, but I am on thin ice today. What is with me? It's like Tuesday morning, I'm just offending everybody.
It's getting confident, look.
That's what it is. That's what it is. So, yes, no one...
It's courage.
Courage, yes. No one loses control. No one dies. No one goes insane. No one becomes psychotic during a panic attack. It just doesn't happen. But yet these are the things that we fear. And the fear is really generated internally, I think, for the most part. It's generated by how we feel and the thoughts that we have. So we should maybe think about that. The difference between a scary thought and which could certainly signal danger, right? I mean, I know for a lot of people, I've heard you talk a lot in the past about negative thoughts. You know, negative thoughts are such a big deal. I've never known
whether it was a sensation that always hits me first or whether it's a thought.
Yeah.
That's one thing that I've always struggled to come to terms with is which comes first.
Okay.
But yeah, negative thinking is a big issue for me. Because when I get bogged down in the negative thoughts,
right.
That's what it is, because they tend to start with maybe it's not such a paralyzing negative thought, but they just escalate and escalate, and one thing leads to another, and then it's the catastrophizing, and that's where I feel like I kind of lose control. I know that I don't, but that's where it becomes just this train of thought that just rolls off
right
on its own.
And it's not that losing control of, like, you know, going insane or losing your mind, it's losing control of your thoughts, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, it's just getting carried away. It's getting snowball. Carried away with it.
Yeah, that can be tough. And so I think the source of the fear that we're talking about, which is the false fear, there really is no real danger, is the sensations in our body, the racing heart, the breathing, the jelly legs, maybe feeling a little off balance or dizzy. That's a big one for me. I still feel that. Primarily, that's still the hardest symptom for me to get past. And and then also what goes on in our heads. So like you said, the racing thoughts, the negative thoughts.
That's it.
The catastrophizing. What if? There's two phrases that I always say that people should probably look out for. One is what if, and the other one is oh my God. When you get to oh my God, or whatever your analog is, when you get to what if or oh my God, you've kind of gone off the rails. And then
here we go.
Here we go. Right. Here it comes. Here it comes. Uh-oh is another one. Uh-oh. And so our thoughts can trigger this, can feel this fear. Our bodies can feel this fear. Are there external things? I mean, we're talking about the fact that this is fear without any danger behind it. Can we think of any external things that actually fuel this fear, that bring about this false fear?
I don't know whether this would be classed as that, but at the moment in the UK, the weather's been really stiflingly hot.
Okay.
And that's something for me that always sets off my panic. But that, then, to be fair, it's the air quality, but then it becomes a breathing thing. So I suppose the external thing is the heat, but then it's my thoughts of I'm not getting enough air, or, you know, so it goes from that, but then it becomes, and we get on that snowball thing. And
that's a good point. It's actually a really good point, because I think we can then have external fear.
Yeah, triggers, I think so.
Right? But the difference is, again, even in that situation, so maybe it's very hot where you are right now, and maybe humid, but it doesn't it doesn't mean you're unsafe. Yet that will trigger this fear thing.
Exactly. Right? That's it.
So it's not so much the external influence or whatever that environment.
Yeah, it's just a little spark or something.
Yes. And it's mainly how we interpret it. So just like anything else, it's how we interpret what our bodies are doing. It's how we interpret our thoughts. It's how we interpret the environment around us that I think puts us in this false fear situation. I'm going to false fear, no real danger, whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think job one that most of us have is, we talked about last week, job one really is to understand the framework of accepting and being courageous and all that, persistence and patience. But really then when you get to the nuts and bolts, which is what we're talking about now, the first thing to do is you're going to have to really believe that the fear, even though it feels so real, every bit as real as if somebody had a gun, is not real. The fear is real, but the danger
this
is not.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, down the road, we're going to have to talk about a little bit more about that fear cycle, I guess, and how we're going to deal with that. But really, our goal today was just to sort of unmask that. Can you think of any times that I mean, I know I can in my own. They're embarrassing sometimes if I think about it, but you know, hey,
go on.
share. But times when you were absolutely convinced that there was a real danger, but and then you know it just turned out to be not. I mean, I could think of many times, and for me, I never had that fear of going insane or losing control. For me, it was always a fear of physical damage or death.
Yeah.
And I can remember very clearly over the years those times where I let it get over the edge, you know, the tipping point, mm-hmm. when it there was nothing you could have done that would have convinced me that I was not having a fatal heart attack or stroke or God knows what sort of physical thing. And we've all wound up, right, in the emergency room.
Touch wood.
You have never done that. Good for you.
I've never gone that far. Yeah.
Good for you. I have done that. I mean, it's embarrassing to me. I mean, not in many, many years, but especially in the beginning, for many people, the first thing is you got to run for help. You got to run for help.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, real help, like ambulances and doctors and nurses in a hospital and that sort of stuff. I think it's interesting you've never gone down that road.
It's really strange. Usually my go-to thing is to just isolate myself. Okay. That's how I tend to deal with it. I'll usually run to the bathroom and just splash water on my face. Wherever I am, that's what I'll do.
Huh.
We used to have a service in the UK by the NHS. I can't remember what it was. I think it was 111 or something like that. It was NHS Direct.
Okay.
So you could phone up this helpline and talk about how you were feeling or whatever, and they'd sort of guide you, or if you needed to go in to hospital, then they would tell you.
Right.
I phoned that once, but I think I was waiting for that long that by the time I'd actually got through, I'd kind of...
felt better.
Hey, I'm still alive.
Guys. Yeah.
So maybe that was their strategy, probably.
Sometimes it, at least here in the U.S., the way it works, and we have a lot of those things. There's no government-sponsored line like that, but I mean, there's a ton of helplines and stuff, usually in each community, each state, or whatever. But we really do tend to err, and I understand why this is. We tend to err on the side of caution. So if you call your doctor at 8 o'clock at night and you get him on the phone or her on the phone and you say, this is what I'm feeling, I've had a doctor say to me, well, it sounds like you're having a panic attack, but just in case –
You
always get that just in case if you're feeling, if you know, short of breath, you should go to the hospital.
And
they'll tell you the same thing. Like as soon as you walk in, I know in my experience, as soon as you walk in, they look at you and they know. They just know because they've seen it a million times. They've seen a million heart attacks, you know. So, you know, in those situations, I do remember very clearly times when I was absolutely convinced. And not only was I convinced, I acted upon it as if it really was danger. And then wound up feeling very embarrassed in the end. So I think many of us have done that. The fact that you have not done that, I think, is so interesting because you will deal with it by isolating a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And almost then acknowledging even tacitly that it's generated from inside. Like you're almost acknowledging like, well, you know, because if you were having a heart attack, splashing water in your face isn't going to save you.
No,
at least I don't know, unless you've invented something new. But
No.
But you're confident enough subconsciously to know to do that as opposed to go for external help, like medical help. So that's really great.
I think I've learned over the years that just allowing the time to pass. Although, I mean, I'm still obviously scared of the symptoms and the sensations, but I know that deep down that if I just, it doesn't matter what I do, it's going to pass. It doesn't matter whether I run around the house or splash water or scream for help or call whoever.
Yes.
I know deep down that 15 minutes down the road, I'll start to feel normal.
And that's the benefit of, unfortunately for you and I, many years of experience.
You
do learn from experience, but you know, in terms of the no real danger, the false fear, I'm always fascinated by how you've learned that over the years. I've learned it over the years. Many people that we both personally know have learned that over the years. There's some mechanism in I don't understand where the mechanism is that made you learn that, or made me learn that, or made Chris learn that, or other people, Ben.
We
both know, but other people almost never have that light bulb go off. So I know of people that are still, you know, heading to a hospital when they have a panic attack.
They
never actually fully accepted that there's actually no danger here. So I'm always, you know, that's for some people, if you're listening and you're new to this, you know, it's this, you're just now getting into like it's a hobby. That was not the right way to say that, but you're just now first dealing with anxiety and panic and those sort of things. This is probably the hardest lesson to learn.
Not one that I consciously learn something but I think like you said, it's time, it's experience, unfortunately.
Right. Sadly, we have to have those experiences to learn this. And even though, you know, rationally, you may know, like, oh, I'm having another panic attack after panic attack number 10, it might really take until number 30 for you to really buy into it. Because what you think rationally and what you do during a panic attack are often two very vastly different things.
Yeah, big time.
But it all comes down to just understanding that the fear isn't real. It's just not real. It's not real.
I think another part of me not calling the emergency department is probably embarrassment as well, just feeling like a bit of a doofus.
Yeah, I have been there. And in those times when I have done that, and I think I've probably only done that three times, if I think back. I've maybe done it three times. And not for many, many years. But I always wind up feeling so embarrassed. And anybody that knows me knows that, like, I'm stubborn. I could be bleeding from the head. I will not call the doctor. Like, that's I'm just stupid that way. But in those situations, I ran for help when I really didn't need it. So it was embarrassing. But maybe we should talk for just a minute about anticipatory, like, future fear, you know, that anticipation, which is such a huge part that stands in the way of a lot of recovery for a lot of people. And the fear that comes, I call it future fear, or anticipatory anxiety,
whatever
you want to call it. Like, that's real fear too, but it's also not real. So, I mean, it's real fear, but the danger isn't real. You know, we're anticipating future danger. I don't know if that's something that you have had. I mean, I think
it's a big one for me. Yeah. Because even though, as we've just been, like, I've spoke about panic attacks as if, don't bother me. But they do bother me. They bother me that much that I anticipate doing pretty much anything at the minute because I don't want to experience, even though I know that allowing time to pass will let the panic attack subside, I still fear bringing that on. I don't want to experience it, and I think that's probably what keeps me personally stuck in the loop.
Okay.
Because you've got to be prepared to experience those feelings and learn that the fear is not real.
Yes.
You know, and there's only so much I feel brave enough in times to put myself through it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you. And that anticipatory thing, I mean, I think in a lot of ways, the future fear or the anticipatory fear is what turns, you know, panic attacks or just anxiety into a disorder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
yeah.
When we anticipate that we may panic or we may have anxiety and we fear how that's going to be, we're anticipating future danger that doesn't even actually exist. That's when we begin to modify our lifestyles. Our worlds get a little smaller. We start avoiding things, people, places, activities.
I'm there.
Right. And that's what turns just anxiety or just a panic attack. Because evidently, almost everybody walking the planet at some point in their life experiences some form of anxiety or even a panic attack here and there.
Yeah, my wife had a panic attack a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And she had the panic attack, and it was like I was talking around, and I dealt with it like a pro.
Sure.
Because I had so much experience, but she's never had another one since.
And she probably didn't give a second
the next
thought,
day,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like
didn't bat
happen.
An eyelid.
But
exactly.
Yet, very first time I ever had a panic attack, I was probably about 18, 19 years old, and I remember it so clearly. And, you know, that immediately had an impact on me. Immediately.
Same.
That first
Same.
Experience set me on a bad road. Yet, you know, your wife has a panic attack and the next day it's like it never happened. So
it's surreal.
Yeah. So the future, that false danger that we anticipate in the future is a huge deal. So, you know, when you know, like, well, I have a wedding to go to next week out of town and, you know, I haven't been out of the house in 3 months. What do I do?
Mm-hmm.
That's that future fear, that anticipation of false danger that's really kind of driving things.
I've missed so many family weddings over the last few years.
Sure, sure.
It's bad.
Well, and that's because of anticipation or future
100%,
fear. 100%.
Yeah, 100%. And there's nothing I'd like more than to go and do it, but it's the fear of experiencing those unwanted, even though I know.
It doesn't matter.
It's the loop.
Well, you know what? If you take out a hammer and smash your finger with it, eventually it will stop hurting. We know that, but it doesn't mean you want to smash your finger with the hammer.
Yeah.
You know,
this is
I would
very
not
good
to
point.
Do that. Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So I get that. And I think it's important for people to understand that it's not just, we're only talking about false fear during a panic attack. We're also talking about false fear or false danger that we anticipate in the future, because when it's happening, that's an event or an episode. But when we anticipate false danger in the future, that's what drives lifestyle changes. And that's what turns us into a disorder. And that's a real thing. So it's okay to you know, accept that and say, like, oh, yeah, that's why I don't leave the house, because I'm afraid of what might happen. So we have to unmask that false danger also.
I feel like this is a counseling session.
it's a counseling session. Maybe it is.
Not,
I don't know.
Well, I'm not complaining.
Yeah. So
no, it's good because I feel like I need to, although I know the nuts and bolts and we've discussed it many a time.
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt to take the old tools out of the box and, you know, yeah,
keep them sharp.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. So I do you think have we exhausted the idea that the fear is real, but the danger is not? These are fake dangers.
Yes, you are in no real danger.
You are in no real danger. Okay, so we've gone about 20 minutes, and I think we should probably wrap it up here. So we don't.
I'm happy with that. Yeah, that's good.
Marathons. Yeah. So I guess we'll end like we're always going to end. If you have questions or comments, you could be. There's a million ways you're going to be able to listen to this or watch this. There's Billy's channel, Anxiety United on YouTube. There's mine, that anxiety guy. So we'll put all the links, you know, the social links.
That'll be there. Yeah. Down there.
Go ahead. And if you're on YouTube, comment whatever channel you're on. If you're listening to this as a podcast on my website, by all means, comment there. And we'll look for comments and we'll talk about them. And I should say.
Yeah, send the comments the truth.
Yeah, send them. Right, I think we said that last time. Ask me questions. Billy doesn't want to hear them. No, that's not true.
I'm busy.
We'll talk about that one day, too. I think that whole, like, discussing it too much thing. You and I have talked about that.
Yeah.
And how that can be detrimental. But sure, send the comments my way. That's fine. I'll give you the link. Twitter, that anxiety guy, facebook.com/thatanxietyguy, or thatanxietyguy.com. And I guess my YouTube channel is also that anxiety guy. So where can they find you, Billy?
I think it is. Yeah. Just
YouTube.com/anxietyunited,
right? That's it.
Good place to
That'll
go.
Do. That's all you need to know.
That's good. Yeah. So ask us whatever you want. And before we go, we got some really, did you look at any of the comments? I mean, I haven't seen the comments on your channel. We got some very nice comments from people.
There was only a couple on mine, I think. I can't remember what they were, but somebody commented this morning, somebody that's watched my 31 days series, and they've been commenting on pretty much every video. Like they've watched it over the course of the week and they commented on it.
Very good. Well, we've got some very, very kind words, and we both appreciate that. So keep it coming.
Very much.
Yeah.
Very much.
Yeah.
So. We're all here. Well, I'm here to learn as well as everybody else.
Hey, I'm learning as we go. So, you know,
this is it. We'll all pick something up from it.
Exactly. So, all right, folks. Well, thanks for hanging out with us, and I guess we're going to see you next time.
We will indeed.
See you, dude.
Bye for now. Yeah. Ta-ra.